There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, another week of live local broadcasting kicking off right here. Glad you're here. Next 2 hours, you and I hanging out, lots of people to talk to, lots of things to get into. Coming up this hour, Alabama's Attorney General Steve Marshall. He joins us about 12:35. Also, we'll be talking to Congressman Bradley Byrne here in just about 10 minutes about Academy Night going on tonight. So if you have a child in your family, maybe you're listening yourself, interested in going to one of the academies, that event's going on tonight. We'll get more details from the congressman coming up in just a couple minutes. But let's go to the man that everybody is listening to year-round, but especially this time of year, expert in tropical weather, and our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams. Thanks for being on.
Oh, good afternoon, Sean.
Afternoon. Okay, this morning we had so much to talk about. We said, you know, earlier in the season when everybody was asking, well, nothing's happening, it's all quiet, and you had said, hey, just wait, and here it is now. How many storms are you watching right now?
Oh, right now, of course, we have three hurricanes that are in the Atlantic, and then a tropical wave that is trying to develop. It's over the northwestern Caribbean. And that tropical wave that could possibly form into a depression once it gets into the Southwest Gulf, but it's not going to be any threat to our area. It most likely will be a rain event for Texas, and right at the moment, they don't need another rain event on the coast of Texas.
That's for sure. But that, okay, so that is could affect the Gulf. The major storm out there, I guess, first impact storm that people are watching is Florence, right?
Yeah, that's the big story right now, and just a short time ago, a reconnaissance plane, this was a research plane, that was into the center of the storm, and it's now been upgraded to a Category 4 with 130-mile-per-hour winds.
Wow.
And conditions are still favorable for further intensification. It's still located well over 1,000 miles away from the U.S. coast, but it is moving in a westerly direction at about 13 miles per hour. And as I mentioned, 130-mile-per-hour winds, and you can pretty well count that on the fact that the wind gusts in there are probably upwards of 145 to 150 miles per hour. It likely target right now, if it continues on the path that we are projecting here, it would come into the coast of North Carolina, probably around Wilmington, and that will be Thursday night. Now, that could change, so it's a long ways off. So to say it's coming in at Wilmington, you know, there are changes. It could come into South Carolina. It could come into coast of Virginia. So all that's possible. But anyway, it looks like a pretty good shot then for the east coast of the United States.
Looking at a storm this big, we talked a little bit this morning, but if people didn't catch that conversation, obviously people hear those winds, they know it's big. Compare it to a Gulf Coast storm so we can kind of get an idea of what you're talking about, the strength of Florence.
Well, right now at 130-mile-per-hour peak wind, it's the same as Hurricane Frederick when it made landfall in 1979. And the fact that it'll continue to intensify will make it very similar to Hurricane Hugo, which was so destructive in South Carolina back in 1989, and also could be compared to Hurricane Hazel back in the 1950s that devastated portions of South Carolina and North Carolina. So it's up there with some of the big ones in the climatology of hurricanes.
Okay, and what about if we look at this impact, this kind of curvature that Florence is on, and just some of the mapping I've seen, is that good or bad for them? Obviously, the whole situation is bad, but is that a big storm surge angle, or is that a lesser angle?
This is a bad situation because the track that it's taking, which is sort of unusual. Most of the storms that come into the coast of North Carolina come up from the east coast of Florida or the Bahamas, and they're in the process of recurving. This one doesn't show any recurving right now. It might do a little bit as it approaches the coast, but it's coming in at what we might call a 90-degree angle, and that's really bad for a storm surge.
All right, so it is looking like a bad situation for wherever it goes on the coast. You mentioned Wilmington, but that could move. How broad of a storm is Florence? In other words, how far away, maybe from where the eye would fall, do you think they're going to be experiencing hurricane-force winds?
Well, it's going to reach out. It most likely will get larger and larger, and we could probably see eventually hurricane force winds extending out 50 miles and maybe more than that out from the center of the storm, perhaps 75, and might develop a pretty good sort of donut eye wall as it builds. So hurricane force winds are going to cover a sizable area, and then of course after that gales will extend out a couple hundred miles from the center.
Wow, that's a big storm. All right, so
it'll be a big storm, and it's got a long time to grow now, covering about 1,000 miles before it reaches the coast.
Oh, and you pointed out that water's warm this time of year, even there in the Atlantic.
Yeah, normally it's the Gulf Stream is easy to see with its warm temperatures along the East Coast, but much of the Atlantic from Bermuda on down through the Bahamas are running 80 to 85 degrees, so it's quite warm. So it has no problem going over warm water, but the upper atmosphere is also conducive. We don't have any strong winds aloft. And so that's what hurricanes like. They don't want strong winds aloft because they'll tear the storm apart. So it's moving into an area that's very conducive to growth and to maintain that storm.
All right. So, y'all, there's Florence. And then this morning you also talked to us about two other storms, one that didn't seem to be an issue for anybody but shipping lanes, I guess, and then one that may be making its way further on west before it starts turning.
Yeah, Helene is the farthest out, and it is up to 105-mile-per-hour winds. That's a Category 2. It's projected to turn more to the north and should stay way out in the open waters of the Atlantic eventually. The other one that we'll watch is Hurricane Isaac to the west of Helene. Has 75-mile-per-hour winds. It's moving west at about 14 miles an hour. This storm looks like it will, in the next couple of days, move into the Caribbean. However, the winds in the upper atmosphere over the Caribbean are quite strong. They're very unfavorable right now for growth of that storm. In fact, it may actually weaken it back into a tropical storm. And so if it survives the winds over the eastern Caribbean and gets into the western Caribbean, perhaps conditions may be more conducive there. But all indications are this is going to stay in the Caribbean and eventually move into Central America.
All right. So the curvature, the northern, the right turn Clyde doesn't seem to be showing itself on Isaac's track.
No, it doesn't. It looks like it will suffer greatly from those upper air winds and probably continue more in a westerly track. So things could change, but that's the way it looks right now.
All right. Well, that's good news for us, but yes. Still very bad news for somewhere along the southeastern Atlantic seaboard, right? I mean, somebody's going to get hit. It's going to be South Carolina, North Carolina, you feel pretty sure.
And perhaps Virginia, too. We can't leave that out. But certainly North Carolina seems to be the target right now.
All right, Dr. Bill, we appreciate the update. Thank you very much.
Okay, Sean.
That's our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, also tropical weather expert. And a man not only giving you your forecast 24/7 here at FM Talk 106.5, keeping you up to date with the tropics all hurricane season long. And yeah, I have gotten to talk a couple times with us today about Florence, not because it, although I see people on Twitter that are from here that maybe have roots here that live up there that are planning to evacuate those areas in North Carolina. Not because it's a storm. Florence will maybe even have a positive effect on our weather long term, but you got to pray for those people in coastal Carolina. This is a big, big storm. All right, coming right back, we'll talk about what's going on tonight. Academy Night, you kids interested in the service academies. Congressman Bradley Byrne will talk to us about that coming up.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, 1220 FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile online at fmtalk1065.com. Check me out on Twitter at fmtalk1065. Also, the website, fmtalk1065.com, where you can go get podcast buffet style. Just kind of pick the show or the hour you're looking for. Or if you just want to get the full meal plan, which is also still free, you can get that very easily when you go to fmtalk1065. Or just look for fmtalk1065 on your iTunes account or your Stitcher account if you're an Android person. Or if you're already streaming us with the TuneIn Radio app, that's that really cool app where you can, you know, obviously stream the show on your phone, but if you get a call or a text, it pauses the audio and lets you pick it back up. It's called TuneIn Radio. It's free. All these are free. So there's TuneIn Radio. They have our podcast on there as well as Spotify now. So if you use Spotify for music, you can also use it for podcast of shows from right here at FM Talk 1065. So if you want to check out some Bill Finch in the middle of your, you know, country music classics over the weekend, that's cool too. You can do that anytime. So that's on Spotify. Got TuneIn Radio, you have Stitcher, you have iTunes, and you have our website, fmtalk1065.com. Get a hide, did not hear a podcast from us. All right, 1221, FM Talk 1065, and I was mentioning this earlier, that we would let's talk to AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne with more on this right here on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time.
Great to be with you, Sean.
Yeah, so Academy Night, I hear that, and other than thinking maybe it's somewhere to, you know, I'm going to go out and buy some fishing tackle, other than that, tell us, this Academy Night that's going on, what is it all about, and where is it, who can show up, who's invited?
Well, it's at the St. Paul's School Auditorium, and it starts at 6 o'clock tonight. We will have representatives of all the service academies there, including the Coast Guard Academy and the Merchant Marine Academy, and of course, West Point, Annapolis Air Force Academy, et cetera. And they'll have tables set up. People can go and talk to the recruiters that are there from these schools. They'll also make a formal presentation to the entire group. It allows our students in this area, not just seniors, by the way, we get freshmen and sophomores to show up. They're trying to think, is this something I want to do? And this is an opportunity for the students to learn more about the academies, and the academies get to know the students that are thinking about going there, which I think is very good for our students who I nominate, increasing their chances of being selected to go to one of the academies. So it's open to anybody, and I hope if there's a young person out there, even a younger young person, somebody that's just a freshman in high school, if they want to come and find out, come on out and find out. It's free, doesn't cost any money. And it's a great night, and I really enjoy it every year.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to get to, is if somebody's hearing this today and says they have a son or a daughter interested, or maybe one of them is listening themselves, and they're interested in coming out, even if they don't have to have anything ready, correct? I mean, they don't have to have done any bad. This could be a first introduction into the academies.
Absolutely, and that's one of the main benefits here, is that you've got students who are thinking, maybe I want to do this, but I'm not sure. It gives them an opportunity to come out, actually have one-on-one contact with the people from the various academies. It's sort of an informational thing for them. Now, many of these students will follow up with tonight by going to the academy that they're interested in or academies that they're interested in. And there's a process in my office that you go through before we nominate you. And you have to be nominated by a senator or a congressman before you actually are in the group that can be considered to be admitted to one of the academies. But we get to know the students through this. Some of these students we've known for 2 or 3 years before we nominate them because they've been coming to the Academy Night showing their interest. So it's really a good sort of two-way thing. Now, we'll say this. I talk to the people that run these academies pretty regularly, and they are blown away by the quality of the people that we've nominated to them. And I run into the students fairly regularly, as a matter of fact. I ran into one when I was at sea this summer on an American U.S. destroyer, and it was a midshipman that was assigned to that destroyer for the summer. The students love being at the academy, so it's a great two-way benefit to the country and to the students in this area.
Yeah, I think we've all heard about the process you're mentioning, but just really, without knowing much detail, that as a congressman, you would take somebody locally, and then when you recommend them, do you recommend them to the individual academy? Do you recommend them to somebody at the Pentagon? How does that work?
No, there's an actual nomination process that each of the academies has, and we actually send the form to them that says we're nominating this person to your academy. Now, there are some times when I'm nominating a person to more than one academy. We've had that happen before. But typically, the student's interested in one of the particular academies. So I have a process that we ask the students to go through to fill out paperwork. We actually are interacting with the high schools that they come from. So we have a pretty good understanding of the young people that we're considering for nomination when we go through it. I do it in December of every year, so plenty of time for everybody to get their information into me, because I want everybody, before they go into the new year, to know that they're going to be nominated or not to whichever academy they're interested in. Fortunately, so far I've been able to, and this is my fifth year, but I've been able to give a nomination to every student that's wanted one since I've been in office.
Wow.
Now, that's not going to be the case every year, but so far we've been able to do that.
Well, what do you tell, Representative Byrne, what do you tell parents when they get in touch with you, maybe they're listening right now, and they want to make sure, like we all do, our children put their best foot forward, have the best situation here for if they do want to go to an academy or any other institution of higher learning. But on the academy side, is there anything that you see that works? In other words, obviously grades and GPA, but do you see more of this kind of extracurricular activity or that kind of, is there a little bit of a formula out there that you can tell us about?
Well, beyond having good grades and good board scores, we do look for, the academies do look for young people that have some sport. Now, it doesn't have to be football or baseball or basketball. It can be just about any sport. But they like to see somebody who's got that sort of well-rounded nature to them. But these academies are physical things. You know, they require you to meet certain physical requirements. And so seeing somebody that's had sort of a history of participating in a sport and that self-discipline in the sport, that's important to the academy. So that's the only other thing besides grades that I think is really important, is having a sport, something that you focused on. You don't have to be the best person on your team, by the way. It's the fact of your participation and that you've had the regularity of it and the discipline of it. That's what really tells them what they're looking for.
This is, once again, going on tonight. What time does it start?
6 o'clock. People do start coming earlier to interact with the Service Academy recruiters that are there. So people will get there as early as 5:30. So it's fine if you want to come on early and have that time with the Academy folks. Come on and do that. We'll actually start the program at 6 o'clock. When the program's over, the people from the Academy is going to stay there afterwards, so there's plenty of time to interact. And I really encourage any parent or any student that's even slightly thinking about it, come on out, take a look, kick the tires on this thing. If it's not for you, that's fine. You figure that out. But if this is for you, this is a great career. And what an incredible education you get for free at America's Service Academies.
Absolutely. Congressman Byrne, thank you for your time, and thanks for what you're doing for getting local kids up to the next level with these academies. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. We enjoy doing it.
All right. Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us right here on Midday Mobile. All right. So there it is. So that's going on tonight. A couple questions here. Here's what I can... Things coming through the text line. I can tell you this. Number one, and I put the flyer is up on my Twitter feed at FMTalk1065. Once again, you could get there a little bit early. It officially starts at 6. Representatives from the U.S. Air Force Academy, U.S. Coast Guard Academy, U.S. Merchant Marine Academy, U.S. Military Academy, and U.S. Naval Academy will all be there tonight. And if you have a child interested, I know a buddy of mine had his son interested a while back and did this program where you can go just ask some questions, get an idea of what's available, what you need to be doing. You don't have to have anything prepared or be ready to present anything tonight. You can just come out and check it out. It's going to be at St. Paul's, and the link is there, St. Paul's Episcopal School in the Monty L. Moore Theater. That's 161 Dogwood Lane. Or you just go look at that link I put up on the site. But somebody was asking about the Coast Guard, and it says Coast Guard Academy will be there. This person said the Coast Guard Academy does not take nominations. Okay, well, maybe that would be the one that doesn't take the nomination, but they're still represented tonight. So if you have a child interested in Coast Guard Academy, it would be a good time to go out and do this. And you heard the congressman say it, even if this is not the year, maybe they're a sophomore, you know, a freshman, sophomore, junior. Even if they're not absolutely ready, if they want to, what a great clearinghouse to get questions, very specific questions answered with the folks that actually are representing those academies. All right, 1229 FM Talk 106.5. We come back after the break. We'll be joined by Attorney General Steve Marshall. He's in town today. He's got an event coming up today where they're doing an opening here, and we're talking about this as the Pathway Healthcare has their grand opening of a new office location here in Mobile. Pathway Healthcare, a provider of office-based medical and behavioral treatment for drug and alcohol addiction and dependency. Of course, this fits hand in glove with the discussions we've been having with the Attorney General for a long time, the current state of opioid use in Alabama. The stats are horrible for our state, are horrible. I mean, you look at areas of our state as a whole, leading the nation, or at least in the, I hate to even say the top five because it makes it sound like it's a good thing, but leading the nation in numbers of people addicted or number of prescriptions for opioids. And what's being done to counter this? Well, we'll talk about that with the Attorney General. Attorney General Steve Marshall joining us here in just a couple minutes. Plus, we'll take your questions on the text line at 343-0106, 343-0106. Coming right back. Also, you'll be able to check out, you can drop questions to the Facebook page as well, facebook.com/FMTalk1065. All right, coming right back, Attorney General Steve Marshall joins us right here on Midday Mobile on a Monday. Glad you're here.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Monday. I mentioned this as we went to the break, that Attorney General of the State of Alabama, Steve Marshall, in Mobile today for the opening of Pathway Healthcare's facility here in Mobile, and joins us now to talk more about that on FM Talk 106.5. Attorney General, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you having me.
And what's happening today? It says grand opening of a new office location, Pathway Healthcare, leading provider of office-based medical and behavioral treatment for drug and alcohol addiction and dependency. How much headway are we making in treating it? And I know there are a broad scope of things, but specifically with opioids, what kind of headway is being made on the treatment side?
Well, I think we're seeing really good progress. You know, number one, you know, we have been able to highlight, I think, almost a 23% reduction in the prescription of opioids over a five-year period. And that matters as it relates to those that potentially are subject to addiction. But Dr. Boyette, who's associated with Pathway Healthcare, has been a really valuable member of our opioid task force. He's a specialist in addiction medicine. And so one of the things that we've had significant discussions about within that group with the plan going forward in Alabama is that opioids are unique in some respects as it relates to treatment, and that, you know, for many addictions, what we encourage in treatment and recovery is abstinence from that particular substance or another controlled substance. What we've learned from research is that with opioids, that there may be forms of medical assisted treatment that's necessary. You know, Suboxone is one of the drugs that's out there now. Methadone has a role here, and also in Vivitrol. And so to the extent that there is a physician coordinating that treatment, we've all had to really sort of rethink how recovery is for opioids, not only on the prescription side, but also with heroin and fentanyl.
Well, you know, talking to you and officers, folks in law enforcement, you can shut down that this has to be done. I mean, if you shut down pill mills or dealers or whatever, you do that, but the addiction doesn't go away. I mean, you can make it harder, but they'll go elsewhere to feed that addiction.
Right, and what we want to do is make sure they're going to recovery and not going to heroin and fentanyl. That's what makes this addiction so powerful as it relates to what we're dealing with in society, is because it eventually, compared to other drugs, is leading to a greater loss of life from overdose. And so, you know, you've identified the significant issue, which is if you squeeze a supply of prescription, then you've got to make sure that you provide opportunities for recovery. And if we look at the strategy, which includes sort of supply reduction, increased law enforcement presence, the work in the area of mental health, treatment and recovery are very much a vital component of this, and that's why Pathway is one of the leaders in that area.
How do you make this? You mentioned different forces at work here. How do you make that seem like the best track to take for somebody who's dealing with this and they, you know, they realize they can't get it doing whatever they were doing before, they can't get the opioid drugs? How do you make the idea in their mind that, hey, I am going to go get treatment. I'm not going to go to something else. Because, I mean, that's got to be a really tough battle in somebody's mind because the addiction is there. That's got to be scary to get off it.
No, it is. And I think you've hit the point that many families and those subject to addiction talk about all the time, is that what is it that compels somebody ultimately to seek recovery? You know, one of the things that I think that we've talked about on your show before is that we've got to do a better job in our society to remove the stigma if somebody wants to get help. You know, many would say, well, that's just a lack of character, or somehow or another you're weak if you're subject to these addictions. And we know that the science is teaching us very different that that's the case, but yet that stigma still exists. And so, you know, we need to be able to remove that so that we can encourage people to voluntarily seek help. You know, for many, it just takes them hitting rock bottom, and sometimes that's sort of known as an arrest. And so what we hope is that we catch them long before they become part of the criminal justice system and allow for our treatment professionals to be able to do good things in recovery.
Now, talk to folks about the stats, too. And I know you laid out some of the reductions that have been made. But even with that being said, Attorney General, we still are a poster case for opioid abuse in this country.
No, and it's concerning when you see the statistics about still we remain number one per capita in opioid addiction, when you have congressional districts that show that of all the ones in the United States, that two of the top five are in Alabama. You know, we continue to be able to push the ball forward relating to the implementation of our strategic plan. We'll have a fully funded PDMP, or that database that doctors and pharmacists can use, that I think will show progress. But one of the areas that we've got to continue to work on is making sure that we have the availability of treatment for those who seek it, whether it be those that have the opportunity to go to Pathway or other providers, or whether it's indigent beds for those who can't afford it. And so we're making progress. I can tell you that over the last year, I've been encouraged about what we've been able to do, pushing the ball forward. But just like nationally, we didn't get into this problem overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight. But I do believe that there is a focus and a coalition of members, both from law enforcement, public health, and mental health, that are making a difference.
Talking to Attorney General Steve Marshall in town for this opening of the Pathways facility today, and I have to get you back and talk about more of all the different mechanisms being used in the state to try to fix this problem. Let's talk about another issue that you've been on with us in the past and discussed. This lawsuit, and I think it takes some explaining here so people understand the lawsuit that we're part of through you in the state. What is the question with the census data, and how does this apply back here in Alabama? We could lose a congressional district, right?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that generally when the census takes place is that one of the purposes of the census is not only to be able to count those that are in this country, but also to then allow for the numbers that are counted for purposes of congressional apportionment, so that we know that when they divide up those members of the House of Representatives on a population basis, how many each state is going to be allocated. And right now, based on experts that we retain, if in the census we count those who are in this country illegally, whether they came across the border without status or whether they've just simply outstayed their visa that allowed them to be here, Alabama's going to go from seven congressional members to six. Not only is that important, but that number that we have that's being taken away is going to eventually either go to California, to Texas, or Arizona. And those are states that we've seen, to some extent, this problem of sanctuary cities that we've talked about before, particularly California. And the other thing that's important about that number is it's not only that congressional seat, but it's also part of the Electoral College, so that Alabama would lose, in essence, a vote for president. And I clearly don't want Alabama to lose that to the state of California.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we'd try to push back if it was happening through a means of just regular population shift, but that would be the rules of our republic, and you go with it. But in this case, you're pointing out that this is not organic. This is happening because it's not truly representing the number of citizens in a given district.
No, and it dilutes the voting authority that we have for the people of Alabama. Is that if you allow for those in this country to be counted for that purpose, in essence, it rewards those communities who simply have opened the door to say that we're not going to enforce the immigration laws of the state. And that is clearly against not only the Constitution, but generally the rule of law. And so I think our lawsuit is very important. You know, I appreciate the fact that I was invited to Congress to be able to testify about this. You know, we have seen, you know, Congressman Byrne has been supportive. We've had Mo Brooks as one of our plaintiffs. And I think it's very important for us to be proactive in trying to preserve Alabama's seat. I'd be very interested to see this week we should receive an answer from DOJ to our lawsuit. I would not be surprised to see the Trump administration agree with our constitutional proposition in this case, but yet still challenge whether or not the lawsuit is premature. You know, what we're attempting to do is to be able to have a judge say, if in fact we're right on the law, let's don't engage in the census count and then have to redo it. That would be a waste of resources. But if we're right on the law, let's allow them to do it correctly the first time.
That would be worrisome. Yeah, if you have to let, I mean, if you have to let the thing happen and, you know, let that whole process go through and lose a congressional district to have standing in this case, then we have to undo all the things that will be done. I mean, we have to do it twice.
Right, and that seems to be a very much a waste of resources, especially when we know kind of what the facts are. You know, if they challenge our experts, they were absolutely on point with their predictions in 2010 when there was a loss of seat in Louisiana and other places. They've been accurate as to what we saw in 2014. And so we believe that we can present the court with a scenario that is grounded in not only science but in fact about what the consequences will be for Alabama but also for Ohio and Montana. They're in a similar boat to Alabama with this issue.
And does it get down to it? I'm thinking about your getting DOJ's response and thinking about where the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, would sit on this. But is it clear? Is it nuance and semantics of what was written out to what they mean by counting in the census? Is that what it is getting down to? I mean, could this go Supreme Court level, or what are you thinking?
I would absolutely believe it would make it to the Supreme Court because there are constitutional questions specifically about the definition of a census and where we are, but also it deals with a rule that was adopted during the Obama administration called the residence rule. It really defines about who's counted. So we have kind of a two-track argument relating to this case, both of which raise issues that we think the Supreme Court may eventually deal with.
All right. Attorney General Steve Marshall, thank you for joining us. And once again, this event tonight, can you remind, or this event this afternoon is at 2?
It's actually at 2 o'clock this afternoon, Pathway Healthcare is going to have a new treatment facility here in Montgomery. They have several around the state. And again, we're very excited and encouraged by what they're doing and want to be able to encourage not only Pathway, but other businesses that want to be able to engage in appropriate treatment of these type of addictions.
There we go. Thank you for your time. We'll have to get you back on the show soon.
Thanks, Sean. Take care.
All right. Attorney General Steve Marshall checking in. Yeah, that event is in Mobile today at 2. They have facilities throughout the state. So, yeah, but it's going to take a multi-pronged, I mean, treatment is not a bad, y'all, you can't just shut down, we've seen what happens. You shut down the pill mills, you shut down the supply, and what happens? People go to heroin and, God forbid, fentanyl. All right, grab some phone calls when we return. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:50, FM Talk 106.5, online at fmtalk1065.com. You stream us there, stream us through the TuneIn radio app. Check out the podcast as well. Big thank you to Attorney General Steve Marshall for joining us, also Representative Bradley Byrne. And coming up next hour, Brendan Kirby is going to talk with us. He's got an interesting piece out at lifeset.com. We'll get into it in just a second. But first, we'll go to the phones at 343-0106. And Carrie is in Fairhope. Hey, Carrie.
Hey, good afternoon, and thank you for your show. It's great.
Thank you.
I just want to say there is another side to the opioid addiction that maybe people are not aware of. Those of us who have had serious injuries, I mean, we will never recover, and we live in constant pain. We are being denied medication to control the pain. They keep reducing the amount of opioids. Now, number one, generics are not 100% of what a name brand drug is. What is it, 75 or 80% that they must make it? And, you know, you can go from there. And it's just a horrible way to live. The definition of chronic pain that we have found on the CDC website in the initial investigation that they were doing to find some guidelines have nothing to do with those of us who are seriously ill. It applies mainly to those who have got a post-operative type situation where they will recover. And unfortunately, yes, we don't want to see anyone addicted. You know, we don't know who has the ability to become addicted, but for those of us who are never going to recover from our illnesses, injuries, some of these things people are born with, like Chiari, spinal cord injuries. we cannot recover. We need help, and we need to have better care. Please address that.
Yeah, you know, Carrie, and we've talked about this in the past, and this is one of these situations where it's the people abusing them, and a lot of those people got on them, like you said, through a legitimate mean, but abusing them, that are then taking that medicine away from people like you. When you talk to your physician, are they not listening, or do they say there's nothing I can do? What do they tell you?
They say it's the state law. The medical board uses the CDC and also what the attorney general is saying too. They limit the amount of opioids we can be given unless you're dying of cancer. Well, excuse me, that's a real lame way to address it.
And so the physician says, hey, Carrie, I know you need this, but my hands are tied. I cannot prescribe it.
That's it. I've gone from 5 opioids a day down to 3, and it's a low dose.
Wow. Obviously, you're not alone.
As criminal as you can get. And I'm only one of thousands. Alabama has laborers. We are not known to be the pencil pushers of the U.S. like the East Coast and the West Coast, okay?
Right.
We have people that work very hard. They have serious injuries. You know, I think people need to be aware of this, not only here, but in upper levels of government. You know who these people are. It's not just a statistic.
Well said. Well said. And hopefully, the problem is, it seems like the abuse was going on a long time before the federal and state governments reacted to it.
Exactly.
And the problem is, you know, the government moves so slowly. And to address an issue like you're having, you know, they move slowly in that. But, you know, we'll do our part to, you know, ratchet up the pressure and the discussion, because I think it's a very valid one. And I'm sorry you have to live with that. I really am.
Thank you, because there's nothing we can do. I mean, we're being forced to go to BDL oil, which, you know, if you get a high titrate enough that it may even help, it's going to show up in a urine test and you're going to be out of the pain management program. Does that make sense?
Unbelievable.
It is. And somebody please listen to us. John, thank you so much for even listening to me.
Always. I'm always interested in hearing real situations. Carrie, thank you. And hopefully we get a solution for you sooner than later. You know, I've talked about this in the past. I've watched it. Now Carrie's talking about chronic, something that's not going to change, versus somebody getting prescribed, on the heels of an operation. I saw it on the other side with family member and a knee replacement and having very little prescription medicine there. I tell you, when it's a loved one that's going through that, and I understand there's a difference, because what Carrie's talking about, that's not ever going to change or get better, versus physicians not wanting to get people hooked on these. It's a tough situation, because the pendulum always, you know, anywhere in American politics, probably politics anywhere, but I just watch our country, the pendulum swings past where it's supposed to be, right? It's too far away, and then there's a correction. It swings past. You want to just grab that pendulum right there and say, no, stop. But it doesn't. It goes too far the other way. And then it comes back the other way. It just briefly passes the center point where it should be. Let's go to Bob in Point Clear next. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
Doing good, Bob.
I've studied pain for a number of years, and pain is a symptom. It is not a condition. Pain is a symptom that needs to be treated. But the cause of the pain is what needs to be treated. Pain does not need to be covered up long term. That only gets people dependent on narcotics. And certainly terminal pain, that people that are dying with cancer, there's no excuse for not giving them all the pain medicine they need. But for most of the conditions that people are treated with narcotics for, should be treated with other devices, other medication, other modes of treatment. And it is wrong to cover up a symptom because that's what's telling you what to do.
Okay, but aren't there not situations, Bob? I mean, I'm not a physician. I didn't even stay at a hotel last night and think I'm one. But aren't there chronic issues that people had? If we had figured out a way around them, wouldn't we have cured those by now?
Well, the problem is when you get someone dependent on narcotics, the ball game's over. You can't tell whether they're having symptoms or whether they just having urge to take the narcotic.
True, but Bob, do you not agree? Bob, hold on. Let me offer some here. Do you agree or disagree that there are chronic issues that people have pain wise that can't be stopped?
Yes, but no. I'm not saying that they can't be stopped because they are a tremendous number.
You said you studied pain. Are you a physician?
Well, say yes, I am.
Okay. So, what do you do if you have? Do you think that the medical industry?
I treated the calls.
What if you can't though? What if you can't?
Well, I don't know many things you can't treat. That is either you don't understand the process, or you're not educated.
Lord knows I don't. I'm just asking questions. I'm just asking questions. I'm not. I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, you don't just treat pain with pain medication. You treat the cause of the pain.
Sure, I would hope, and I would
and eliminate it, and your pain will go away. Now, if you get somebody addicted to pain medicine, in the meantime, then you've got another problem on your hands.
All right. Well, and I agree with you that you've got another problem on your hands when you get them addicted. And I'm not speaking from an educated perspective, but just in the world I've seen around me in my 46 years, there are people that have issues that physicians say they can't solve.